B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everybody, welcome to the program. Felger Maserati coming to you on, I don't even know, Wednesday, March 11th?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
So we are? Here, hold on one second.
March 11th is correct, by the way.
I want to put my windscreen on there. Tony Maz, if you're watching on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, is on location. You got Big Jim Murray and myself, Mike Felger, here from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Maz, how are you?
Good, you?
Good, man. What are you doing? What's the story?
Well, I got some flu-like symptoms, so I'm gonna shack up here at my house today and avoid exposing myself to other people.
Okay, good for you.
Just trying to play it safe, dude. You know, don't want to whatever it is. You know, I'm under specific instructions to whatever it is, keep it to myself.
Oh, is that right?
That's basically the plan at this stage. Yes,
is that from the real boss? And whatever. Anyway, so Maz is at home playing it safe. Murray and myself here again from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. And maybe just take this opportunity to real quickly just sort of hit on a few things coronavirus-wise. Maybe start off with the first thing, which is caution versus panic. And I think a few too many people are throwing around that panic word, like, wiping down is panicking, or Maz staying home is panicking, or the program director keeping me home last Friday is panicking, or do people think people are panicking? I mean, Murray, I think you felt this way, right?
Felt? No, you don't have to use it in past tense. I'm there, and if you want to yell at me, have at it. So, my grandparents, that generation, will get to tell people, you know, we lived through World War II and real strife. And this generation, my generation, will be able to tell their grandkids, I lived through the dumbest time in human history.
And this is it? This is
part of it. Yep, just another small part of it.
It's dumb for Maz to stay home?
How sick is he? But, you know, I get it. There's protocol, and we're all following, so I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you know, I've thought about it for a few days, and I just really strongly disagree with you, Jim. I do. There is a difference between caution and panic. And what, do you think the thing is fake?
No, I don't. But I think it's been kind of blown out of proportion, and life has to go on. And I worry about the businesses that are going to be crippled and people that are going to be losing money that are by the day.
Okay, so and I understand that. You know, there is a real economic impact there. But what if you underplay it and then the entire country's crippled? And the loss on the back end is greater than whatever it would be taking a few chunks out of it on the front end. You know, in other words, you can be overly cautious and make sure it doesn't proliferate to the point where it cripples us. And that's going to cost everybody some money in the short term, no question about it. But if you underplay it and it proliferates and it brings us to a grinding halt, and then we've got to shut down for weeks or months, you lose more money. So you lose more money, and there's a greater economic impact by underplaying it and having it do what it's doing to Italy. I mean, I don't understand. What I mean, you're just afraid to take the little short-term hit to protect yourselves against a big thing on the back end?
For me, right now, the short-term hit feels like it's a half measure. Either, you know, essentially declare martial law and do what Italy has now done and tell people they can't go anything and cancel events and cancel them all and cancel the Boston Marathon, or don't, and, you know, like, continue to report on it and be diligent and wipe down and keep washing your hands. All that is true, and it's much more serious than the flu. I've come around on that. But it just feels like we're kind of riding the fence on it right now as a whole, as a country.
Well, like, that's fair. I'm you know, I'm all in favor of being overly cautious, all in favor. And I think that the leadership on this at the federal level especially has been disappointing, because I think it should be treated with an abundance of caution, not the other side of it, not the other side of it. It shouldn't be the fake flu, and it shouldn't be go to work. It should be the other thing, because what's wrong with being overly cautious? Yep, you'll take a hit on the short end, and I don't take that lightly. People who are hurting financially or economically, it'll take a little bite out of you on the short end, but the risk on the back end is so much greater. And if you just want to put it in dollars and cents, never mind the health of everybody and the health of our health system and all of that, to me, it's a no-brainer. So it's taken me a couple days. I've let it play out a little bit, and this is what I've arrived at. Before I keep prattling on, you have a thought, Maz?
Yeah, so look, here's what I would tell you, that you know, there were certain people that are being affected by this thing more than others. And do I think I have it? I have no idea. I mean, you know, I got what feels to me like a cold, but I'm also not sure I'm one of the people that would be most affected by this thing. So whatever. What I would tell you, though, is that we all work with people who are potentially going to be more vulnerable to it than others. And we don't even know who those people are. And we don't even know if it's already in the building, for crying out loud. So what I do know is that if it's possible to do it this way for now, then I'll do it this way, because if it keeps other people safe, then that's the way to do it. I just look at it in those terms. So I'm not worried about me. All in all, I feel okay. But if there is a risk of potentially giving someone something serious, then to me, you stay away. It's just that simple.
Yeah. So I'm just talking big picture. I'm talking about for all of us, not specifically here at work or anywhere else. The thing is, it's not deadly to us. The disease is not deadly to us, meaning you, me, Murray, you know, middle-aged, healthy people, knock on wood. But it is deadly to our parents, all right? But it's beyond that. If someone who is healthy and can recover from it gets it, you still generally need medical attention. You're going to have to get medical attention. And what if there's lines out the door? What if there's no beds? What if the healthcare system is overrun to the point where you can't receive medical care? Then it's something that you should recover from, you don't recover from, or it's longer and there's even a bigger drag on society. So that's the issue. It's not that it's going to kill you, knock on wood, us, but it will your parents, it will our parents, and the strain is going to put on the medical system and society if you can get out ahead of it by being cautious now, overly cautious now. Why would you not do that? Why would you? What, you think it's made up? Do you think what's going on in Italy right now is made up?
No. So again, my thing is, why continue the slow crawl? If we're heading that way, well, then let's just pull the plug on everything in terms of events, and let's just have declare martial law, keep everyone in their houses, if that's the only way it's going to be contained. Because it seems like that's what it is. If some of these countries like China and Italy are getting a handle on it, or at least China and South Korea, then let's enough with the half measures.
I'm with you.
So that's where a lot of my frustration is
so I'm
stemming
looking,
from.
I'm looking for some leadership on that. Federally, I think local, I think locally in this part of the country and others, it's been more active and stronger. I'm looking for direction on that. You know, I am. And if you want to be overly cautious, I think that's the way to go. On maybe just a little bit of a lighter note, there are some things here that I think have some staying power, and I hope sort of stay with us just in closing. And that is the social distancing thing works for me. Okay, you know, it just works for me in general. Like, I'm fine with that if that's the policy going forward. OK, Okay, so that has really worked for me in the short term. No excuse now. There's really no, we're not small talking. You're not going to get close enough to small talk, and we're not going to breathe on each other, and we're just going to keep our distance and go to work and come home. Like, that works for me. I'm sorry. That just does. No small talk. Also, the handshake thing. You know, the handshake. I don't know how I feel about the handshake. And if that's something that we start, you know, at a macro level, start sort of moving away from, I that wouldn't upset me. That wouldn't upset me at all. It's kind of a filthy habit when you think of it. I mean, it really is.
How about we just tap shoes?
Well, so, I mean, I've been thinking about this.
Bow. Well, let's bow to each other.
Thank you, Stu. I was just going to say.
Japanese culture.
The Asian cultures. I mean, the bowing is such a graceful, nice, humble gesture. It is. It's, you know, it's, and, you know, there's no touching and you're not even close to someone, but you're, it's humble. It's, you're acquiescing. It's really, I mean, I'm being
respectful,
really respectful. Ugh. And graceful. Oh, it's a wonderful gesture.
Monarchs and kings want you to bow to them. Hell with that.
You're not getting down on knees. You're just doing a simple bow.
Yeah. How about just a little nod of the head?
Well, so like
a temporary pause for me. I like shaking hands.
Well, so in America, I mean, because we're cool, we can make something else up, like, you know, a little, you know, like, I mean, I don't know, fist pump. Like, I mean, not touching, but like, you know, instead of the bow, if you don't like the bow, which is, and it's not just to monarchs, like, everyone does it.
No, I know. In Japan, that's the greeting.
I mean, equals, right. I mean, it's not, you're not,
bow.
You're not bowing to someone superior to you. You're actually doing just the opposite. You're, you know, making yourself not subservient, but you're, you know.
Deferential.
It's a deferential, humble, graceful gesture. It's a wonderful gesture.
I like the handshake because you learn a lot about a person with a handshake. We can't shake, you can't trust that person.
Oh, it's so true. It's true, I agree. But what if it's filthy? What if it gets you sick? I mean,
I will put the temporary pause in the handshake.
I'll tell you what, I'll even give like the Zolak top head toss. Like,
okay, exactly, okay, Matt. So we're Americans. We pretend that we're cooler. You know, we're not. You know, no Texan. I ain't subservient to you. You know, we ain't mess with Texas. So you're not going to bow to anyone. I get it, tough guy. I get it. So let's come up with something else because we're American. Like, you know, a little fist in the air, little something that's cool. If you want to be cool because you're American, you can do that. But the handshake, I wonder about that. I wonder about the future of the handshake. And if you consider that panicking, then, I can't help you. But the handshake's making people sick. You know, ask the people at Biogen how they feel about all the handshaking that was going on at that meeting there last week. All right, so there's your little coronavirus, interlude. We haven't done a lot of it. I hope to do what we usually do during these times of big news events is to give you the spot on the channel where you can talk sports. And that's what we're here for. And if you want those other things, there's obviously other channels for that. But we are here for that other thing, for the play thing. So I do want to start off this hour talking about the Bruins last night, the Celtics last night, and your thoughts on both. I think there's issues with both. So we'll get to them right after these words.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Now you got a break. Here's Voracek, left circle, centered, and Rask, what a stop! Reached down with the left hand, and Rob Konecny.
Oh, what a save there. Konecny picked that puck out of the air. Rask picked it out of the air.
Back of the net fired, and Rask the stop on Grant, who got free in the slot. Look out, 2-on-1 in transition. It's Hayes into the right circle. Short-handed fires. Rask, a right leg save. Sent out in front. Oh, Rask, what a stop on Provorov, who moved up.
All right, let's talk some ball. Murray and I in our Top Retire Studios. Maz on location. What did I tell you about Rask, Murray? What did I tell you? Did I not say this yesterday?
Yeah, no, he and the team typically bounce back when they have a bit of a dip, or even if it's a somewhat of a concerning loss like they did Saturday night against Tampa, where Rask looked like a sieve on those two shorthanded goals. So he was excellent last night. Beyond excellent. He was amazing in that game last night.
Just terrific. And that's just... It's just more of my buy-in with this team. Like, most every time they've needed it, most every time they've been in a bounce-back spot or a response spot this season, they've responded. And not they. I mean, not that the team was great. They got outplayed for two periods. But, oh, well, goaltending's part of the equation. And Rask, after one of his weakest games, he had his specific bounce-back. And he goes in there and steals you a game. He was terrific, especially over those first two periods when you were pretty much getting your ass kicked. So that's just another little snippet of why I'm buying in on this team. And I've bought in on the team all season long, every time, just about. I can't tell you it's been 100% of the time, but just about every time they've been in that spot where it's like, who are they? What are they? Which direction is this going? They've responded. And last night it was about the goalie more than anything else, but oh well, he's on that list. And I've been telling you all season long, if you get Rask to Game 7 this year, he's going to win it. If you can get to Game 7, he's going to win it. If you get rubbed out in 5 in the second round, then that's, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. But if you get to that spot, Game 7, got to have it, Rask is going to win it this year. Because that's the kind of year they're having, and he's a part of it. Maz, your thoughts?
Well, so look, he was the best player on the ice. I mean, again, I thought they got bottled up there for the first couple of periods of the game. And I feel like I've seen that a couple of times. There have been some teams that have given them some difficulty at late, and they look a little like they looked against the Blues last year when they couldn't get the puck out of their own end. So I thought Calgary did that to them. I thought the Flyers have done that to them. But they have shown the ability to win games in different ways. So last night, the goalie stole them one. The second goal they got was an absolute gift. The goalie obviously didn't see it. I'm not taking anything away from Bergeron, but that puck typically doesn't go in. So, and coming off the Tampa loss over the weekend, it was a good bounce back. But the goalie bailed their ass out last night. There's no two ways about it.
That's good. I take that as a good thing. And that hopefully Rask is on this. Hopefully Rask is on the same campaign the team is, which is we left one on the table last year, and we're not going to do it again. And he needs it more than anyone. He needs it more. That boy needs a Stanley Cup more than anyone on that team. So hopefully he feels it more than anyone on that team. Hopefully he's motivated more than anyone on that team. Hopefully the signs we've seen from him this year tell you that it's going to be different this year when he gets to Game 7. Maybe last night is just another little indication of it. That's what I'm feeling, and I've felt that way all year on Rask. The other thing that caught my eye was, well, two other things. I think Philly's legit. I think Philly's legit. Fast, attacking, feels like they have their goalie. You know, the kid had a good year last year, but I've seen rookie goalies have good rookie years in Philadelphia and then completely fall apart. But Hart is back for that second year, so they have the goaltending, which has always been the problem there. And they're, you know, I like their depth. It feels like, you know, every line is attacking you. But when you look at the top of their roster, Maz, it rivals yours. That first line of Giroux, Couturier, and Voracek is, you know, I'll put that up against any first line in the league, and their first D pair, Provorov and Niskanen, is legit. They've got some high-end talent. That's a legit team.
Well, so look, the issue there has always been goaltending and defense. That's what it's been. It's been that way for a long time. And if they could ever shore that up, they're a team that can give a lot of people difficulty. So, look, I was impressed by the Flyers last night. I thought they're way better than I thought they were. And I thought maybe they were just a hot team, a little bit of a fluky team. But I thought they were all over the Bruins. How many shots did the Bruins have in the first, 15 minutes of the game? 10?
I thought they were outshot 27-14 in the first two, something like that.
I want to say they had like 10 shots halfway through the second period. I thought they were getting smothered at times, and so I give Vigneault a lot of credit because I didn't think he had it in him to turn around a team quite that way. You know, I sort of envision him as being, and I probably have this wrong, but I think of that Vancouver team that the Bruins beat in the Cup when every time I think of Vigneault. And to me, Philly was all over the Bruins in that game. I mean, without Rask, they lose that game easily.
Okay, the final thing that stood out to me was the lineup and how Cassidy juggled those lines, and hopefully...
No question.
Hopefully he's not afraid to do that in the postseason. You have a thought, Mass?
Well, so look, again, he mixed it up. And it's something that never would have happened under Julian. You ultimately had Kashi going up with the first group there and all kinds of moving around. With Pastrnak ending up with Krejci at times. And the other thing I was impressed by is, look, the Bruins are missing two of their best defensemen. I mean, you're basically missing your whole second pairing. I thought Grzelcyk really stepped up. I thought he had a good game. And so it was kind of a, you know, it was a grit and balls kind of win. That's what it was, and you got to give him credit for that all the way through the lineup.
Okay, so back to the lineup, though. He moves Pastrnak with Krejci and Corrali, DeBrusque down with Coyle and Richie, and then Kashe got that wing spot next to Bergeron and Marchand. It's something that he has to continue to do into the postseason. Has to. If that top line stagnates and someone gets him, like, you know, that happened last year in the postseason. He can't just ride those three out there every third, fourth shift and just let them get smushed. Because as good as the line is, they can be neutralized. We've seen it. So when that happens, there's nothing wrong with giving Pastrnak to David Krejci.
I thought that Pasta and Krejci looked awesome on that line, and I would like to see more of that. I thought Corrali was all right on the second line, and I don't know, maybe put Kasha up there. Maybe they think they'd be too soft. I don't know, but I thought that pairing worked.
Well, again, Kasha was with Bergeron and Marchand in that game last night. And so just one final thing. You know what forward has led you in minutes the last five games running?
And that's Coyle?
Charlie Coyle. So this whole thing about improving your second line and giving Krejci a wing, I think people are missing it. Charlie Coyle is your second center. I mean, Coyle's been getting much more run than David Krejci recently. Never mind Patrice Bergeron, too. Charlie Coyle has led you in minutes the last five, it might be six games now, and shifts. Well, he got more shifts anyway than Krejci. I'm not sure about Bergeron, but he got more minutes than Bergeron. Coyle, to me, has become one of your most valuable players because he's going to be the key to the secondary scoring, not David Krejci. To me, it's about Charlie Coyle. And I'll just hit on one more thing quickly because we mentioned it last week. Charlie Coyle is a true three-zone player. That we talked about this thing with Claude and his idea of a three-zone player with someone who just packed it in. A true three-zone player also brings you offense. Charlie Coyle is a true three-zone player. He gets down low defensively. He's great defensively. And him offensively carrying the puck, he's a force. He just is. And so this whole thing about getting Krejci help in the second line, no. It's Charlie Coyle getting him help and finding guys that can play with him. And if it's DeBrusque, then keep DeBrusque with him because he's a more valuable guy. Charlie Coyle is more valuable to you now than David Krejci based on the minutes and the shifts. So those are your Bruins thoughts at 617-779-0985. On the Celtics, why do I still feel bad about them even though they won last night? How come I feel like they blew another game last night?
Because they did everything in their power to pee that game away in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my God.
That was absurd.
They should have. They're up 19 at one point. They're up what in the fourth quarter? 14-16. And at one point, inside of 2 minutes, they're down three, and Indy has the ball. And Oladipo came down and took a really stupid three-pointer. I think they had blocked,
horrible.
They had blocked Tatum at the rim. Indy's up three with like a .157. And instead of, you know, using clock or getting a good shot, Oladipo shot it from, you know, basically the center court logo. And it, you know, he missed it badly, and that was it. So if not for that possession, if the Pacers were just a little smarter on that possession, you blow another 19-point lead, Maz. Something's wrong with the Celtics right now.
Well, so look, it's happened a lot lately. And again, and the guys to me that are most disappointing at the end of these games are some of the veteran guys. I thought Kemba Walker took some stupid shots. I thought Smart, to me, he made a couple of plays at the end of the game, but Smart's the guy I look for to not make stupid mistakes. And even Hayward. These are veteran guys. It's one thing for Tatum to make a dumb play. And I actually thought Tatum was okay in the final minutes there because he was the only one I felt like that was going to the rim. The only buckets they got were on Tatum dunks, and Smart had a layup in there. But they completely crapped their pants during that stretch where Indiana made the run. The Celtics, in the span of 11 possessions, went 1-for-9. Most of them were threes. They missed 5 threes. They turned the ball over twice on stupid passes, and one of their misses with Kemba Walker, like, fall away, that wasn't a three, technically, but might as well have been. Can somebody just go to the rim and get a bucket? Like, really, you're looking at it going, listen, when they start making a run like this, get the two. What's wrong with the two? And that Oladipo miss that you talked about, that thing was 5. 5 seconds after Tatum missed.
Brutal.
Talk about it. The only thing that saved them last night was that Indiana was stupider than the Celtics were.
Yeah, and it was that Oladipo shot. It all came down to that. They're
unbelievable.
Up three with just under 2 minutes. They can run the whole 24-second clock, get a good look, bang it inside, whatever. And instead, he just comes down and launches. And that won you the game. That got you the game. But make no mistake, the same problems that you've had, you had last night. And so there's just something, Maz, there's something fragile about the team, maybe, you know, physically and mentally, something shaky about the team, something not right about the team. There's just – go ahead.
Well, so I was going to say, and how about Hayward, too, during that sequence, right? He kicked the ball out to Tice at one point that it felt to me like – now, Tice made the shot.
It's a big three, yeah.
Yeah, so Tice made it, but Hayward, to me, couldn't get rid of the ball fast enough. And, Mike, this is now the second game that we've seen in the last week where they had trouble executing an inbounds play. So there was the one in the Brooklyn game where Walker got tied up that led to the jump ball that forced overtime and ultimately led to a loss. And then last night, go back and look at that thing. Smart could have been called for backcourt.
Yes.
So
you're
go ahead.
You're leaving out the thing on Sunday night against OKC. That disaster. Maybe you haven't caught up on that yet, but Kemba Walker got go back and look at that. So you want to say it's really three games in a row, Maz. Continue.
I mean, horrendous. So these are basic plays. And the one last night, holy crap. Yeah, Tatum sitting there holding on to the ball. I tried to slow down the replay because they didn't dwell on this on the broadcast. But looking at it, I said, I think that was backcourt. I think Smart was still in the front court when he touched the ball and then went into the backcourt. I thought they got away with one there. They absolutely crapped their pants again.
Okay, so I'm right now, because it feels to me like you didn't see it, go back and watch the last play Sunday night against OKC. That is a requirement. You really want to lose your mind on how they're playing late in these games. That's the one you want to see.
Bruins, so I did miss the end of that game.
Do it now. I'm telling you. Do yourself a favor. Bruins thoughts, Celtics thoughts with you right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke's blue.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This ball game is over. The Celtics losing streak is over. And the Boston Celtics, for the sixth consecutive year, are going to the playoffs. They survive a near collapse tonight at the Fieldhouse. But they play a strong final minute, some big plays and buckets down the stretch from Marcus Smart. And the Celtics win it by a final of 114 to 111.
So they make the playoffs, but I'm not feeling good about them. And I've been on the C's train all season long. I don't know. I know the Lakers lost last night to the Nets of all teams, but I thought the Lakers last week had a stretch where they just sort of, you know,
beating Milwaukee and then beating the Clippers.
They showed you what they, you know, they showed you what they were, and they looked really good in the process. And it's like, all right, now this is what we are. We'll see you in April. We'll see you in the postseason, and there you go. And the Celtics, that hot stretch after the All-Star break, Tatum's hot stretch after the All-Star break, I feel like they had it there. But now, I don't know, they should have lost that game. They're down 3 points with 2 minutes left after leading by 19. It was almost their fourth or fifth straight big blown loss. And it really should have been that way if Oladipo was just smarter with the ball inside of 2 minutes. So I don't like their health. I don't like something about their mental toughness or their, you know, they've seemed to have lost their they're poised down the stretch in these games, these inbound plays, Maz, that you're talking about. Kemba Walker ain't right. Let me just start with that. He ain't right. He's not the same guy, you know?
No, he's not. Look, so to me, it was painfully apparent last night. Well, I thought Walker took some stupid shots, too. And maybe it's because he knows he can't get by guys and get to the basket. There's an issue with the knee or whatever. So maybe that's what's going on. I can't tell you how irritated it makes me to watch a team blow a 16-point lead. Okay, they were up 16 with a little under 8 minutes to go. 7:45 to go. They're still up 16. And all they're doing is checking up threes. And from veteran guys, can you just go to the bat? And Walker was in the middle of this, Mike, which is why it led me to that thought. It's, you're talking about a veteran guy. If you can't go to the hoop because of your knee, then give the ball to Tatum and let him go to the hoop.
And so this recent stretch also frustrates me with Ainge and not doing anything, because I think their depth is clearly hurting them. You know, one injury, and it's like they have nothing off the bench. Semi Ojeleye is their best bench player. Like, that's a freaking joke. Okay, and I know
it's a sentence that should never be uttered.
Their bench blows. It blows.
Terrible. So I get it when Jaylen Brown comes back. Smart goes there. I think Hayward should go there when Smart comes back. But whatever. I think that also has come home to roost. Their depth has come home to roost big time. And I think one game could be the difference between the 2-3 seed and home court in the second round and the whole road. Because as it stands right now, you open with Philly. Which is, I hate Philly. I think they're a trash team, but that's a tough first round matchup. That's the first round. Then you're at Toronto, at Milwaukee. I don't know if you survived that.
I don't think you're getting out of Toronto.
I've liked you coming out of the East all year, or really getting close. But that's presuming you're hosting. You know, you have a bunny in the first round. The difference between the 2 and 3 seed is huge. As a 2 seed, you get Brooklyn or Orlando in that first round. And that's a no-brainer. That's a 4 or 5 game series, and then a week and a half off.
Well, look at it. And to your point, if Philly's healthy, Philly's a bad matchup for them. Like, there's that element, too, just because of the size. So Philly's giving them a hard time, and I feel better about Philly than you do. But that road, look, the way you spell it out like that, it's almost like I've said about the Bruins. If the Bruins have to play getting out of there, Tampa, then, you know, Washington, and then St. Louis to win the Cup, they're not going to win it. And I would say if the Celtics have the road you're talking about, they're not getting through those three teams, no way.
Okay, so, all these little things, blowing these late leads, not being able to inbound the effing ball, not helping your bench. It's all sort of coming home to roost, and it's bugging me. So there's your Celtic thought. Bruins Celtics here to lead off the program. Craig in the car, give me a Bruins thought.
Hey, guys, I just wanted to say, over the past couple of games with Tampa Bay and Philly and the way Rask has been playing, it showed me for sure that the Bruins are the third or fourth best team in the league, no question. But what it also does is it frustrates me that the other teams like Tampa Bay and like Toronto, some of the other teams, have gone out and really made themselves better. And the Bruins are still, you know, like with Johansson last year and with Richie this year, I still, ever since the year where they picked those 3 draft picks in a row.
Okay, why are we going another call about the effing 2015 draft? Can we do that another time? God, why would people call him the 2015 draft? We'll do that another time when we're assessing Don Sweeney. What does that have to do with last night? And the caller's acting like Johansson was a bad pickup last night? I mean, Johansson was a bad pickup last year? He was good for you. He was really good for you. He helped you get to Game 7 of the Finals. What are you talking about?
I actually feel okay about the Bruins right now, and because I think Tampa, that game over the weekend, oh my God, what a series it would be between these two teams. And I know I'm behind you guys on this. But I feel like when the Bruins played them 2-3 years ago, whatever it was, 2 years ago, they got smothered. That's not happening now. I think they're standing up to the Lightning. I think they're pretty close. Now, look, I know Stamkos is out. Okay, so I'm not diminishing that absence. But I actually have been, after the first game, I've been okay with what Richie has given them. And I like what I'm seeing from Kashe. Give them a little more time. I think there's a chance they get something out of those two guys. The caller says they're the fourth or fifth best team in the league. I don't think they're much beyond third.
Oh, I think they're as good as anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're right there.
But that doesn't mean anything in hockey. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, in basketball, it's everything. If you're the one, you're the one. You win. If you're the one in hockey, it doesn't really mean much. But I'm just, going into it, they're as good as anybody. I think they've caught Tampa. Frankly, I think they've caught Tampa. Or Stamkos' injury has brought them back to you. And so I think that's an even matchup. And I think, you controlled most of those two games. I think Tampa may have gotten tougher, which is going to make it a tougher series. I think Tampa showed more on Saturday than you did. I think they needed to show more than you did on Saturday. But be that as it may, I think the Bruins are as good as any team in the league. I think they're a cup team. I think they're a cup team. Now, that doesn't mean anything. You can get tripped up and have a bad week, and, like, that's the NHL. But I think they're as good as anyone. And the pickups, let's see. I think both have shown up. I think both have a chance to be something. Okay? But, God, I think every time we talk Bruins, was it the same guy? We could be talking about Yaroslav Halak, and the guy will call and say, that 2015 draft, we get it. They blew the 15 draft. God, we'll talk about it when we talk about Sweeney. That's just so annoying.
Yeah, the Sox never should have let Lester go.
God, all right. Yeah, they traded Nomar. Yes, got it. Long commercial-free segment is next. More Bruins thoughts right after this.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mazz.
I love it.
You were right, Mazz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Puck rimmed over to the far side. Provorov over the line left side. Feeds to Couturier along the near wall. The Bruins have it with three. Dished up the right side and back into the Flyer end. And this game is final. Tuukka Rask, on his 33rd birthday, will celebrate a 36-save shutout. It's his fifth of the year. The Boston Bruins are the first team in the National Hockey League to 100 points, and they snap the Flyers' 9-game winning streak with a 2-0 shutout here at the Wells Fargo Center.
Opening with some Bruins-Celtics thoughts. Frank the Tank, your thoughts on the Bees last night?
Well, look, you know, as far as last night's game go, sneaky important game for the Bruins. Philadelphia has pretty much handled them very, very well. Even last night, they handled them well, but Rask did steal the show. Look, as far as what Mazz is talking about, you know, being close to Tampa, I don't think that they're Tampa. I think Tampa still is a better team, especially if Stamkos comes back. But to me, I think the East this year is not going to be what it was last year. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot more competitive come the playoffs this year. You got to worry about Philly. You got to worry about Pittsburgh and Washington. I think it's going to be a really seriously great.
Let me ask something, Frank. Let me ask you.
Yeah.
Are the Bruins better or worse than they were last year?
Better. They are better than they were last year.
I agree.
But the simple fact that there's a different feel to me, Mike. I don't know if you I think you know what I'm talking about.
I think they're playing better. I mean, it's roughly the same roster, you know, give or take a guy here or there. I just think they're playing better this year.
Yeah, and what you were saying about Coyle, I mean, I say it all the time, you know, putting the Coyle on the knuckles, coach. The guy is a very, very important member to the team at this point. He is your second line center. And, you know, you look at what happened last night, not having Carlo and Krug. And if Bruins fans have any true salt to them, you will vote Carlo for the seventh player award. The kid has become a beast this year.
Frank.
But the team is definitely, definitely, Mike, they've got the red ass.
They
and
do.
It's showing on the ice. You can't help but see it.
Yeah, but Frank, gun to your head.
Go ahead.
I want to know, because he always texts me, like, you know, during Saturday night, after that, particularly after that second hideous goal given up by Rask. I just want to know, gun to his head, does he trust Rask in the playoffs? Because they look different, and Rask was why they won that game last night. But I still don't trust him, and I don't, and I'm never going to, not after last year.
Mazz?
I mean, I just feel I'm with Frank on this one. I feel like they've made a jump this year. They're absolutely better than they were a year ago. And I put a premium on these two games for Tampa. I'm sorry. Because my lasting memory of that season 2 years ago was them getting absolutely smothered. They just weren't in the same class. They weren't ready for it. And now they are. And I think they're letting everybody know they are. Like, you know, look, the road is what worries me about them. I believe in the makeup. I believe in the heart. I believe in the competitiveness. But the road scares the crap out of me. If they have to go through, and the East is going to be brutal. So if they have to go through, you know, two tough teams, Washington, Tampa, you know, and whoever else, well, in the final, let's say St. Louis, I just don't think they can survive that. I don't think anyone can.
Mazz, you catch up on the OKC thing?
So I did. Look, again, the thing that I find interesting about the sequence at the end of that game along with the Brooklyn game is both times they tried to go to Kemba. Last night, they tried to get the ball to Smart.
Well, why do you think?
Okay, so exactly. And I think that the logic is that Kemba's an excellent free throw shooter, so they want to get the ball in his hands. The problem is he's so little that he can't create space for himself. And if he gets doubled, in this case, you know, Schroeder sneaked in on him and handcuffed him and took the ball away. But I think that this is a problem with Kemba. He's not going to get space in traffic, and late in the game, they're going to put the whistles away. So I would rather have someone tall inbound the ball. Can you have Tyson bound the ball and go to Tatum? Can they do that? Put the ball in Tatum's hands. Tatum's their best scorer. Put the ball in Tatum's hands.
This surprises me. They've just sort of lost their way late in the game. And I think they used to be so solid with this. Like, this is when I say it's winning time. You know, they might be outmatched against a certain team, but you give Stevens, you know, his timeout. You give Stevens a chance to work his magic in the final 2 minutes. The other team's going to implode, and you're going to win those ball games. And I feel like it's reversed itself somehow. And I don't know how this happened or when it happened, but it's happened.
And, Mike, you know, let's not forget, too, that one of the only, you know, the Houston game, the Rockets absolutely crapped their pants at the end. So it's not like the Celtics are having one good, one bad. It's a matter of who craps their pants worse to lose a game. And I would argue that Indiana last night crapped their pants just as badly as the Celtics did. That shot from Oladipo, oh, God, is that awful. You're up three. They're falling apart. 5 seconds after the miss, you come over midcourt, you chuck one up from 30 feet. Like, that, to me, that's a finable shot. Like, that's the kind of shot that a guy should be fined for crying out loud.
Okay. Before we hit the top of the hour and get to the Brady Watch next hour, just a coronavirus update. Murray, did you see the Golden State Warriors are going to play Thursday's game against the Nets?
Yes.
With no fans inside the Chase Center. Do you feel that's an overreaction?
I mean, this is the way we're heading. So, again, what's with the half measures? Like, so, like, just announce that all of these games and all of the leagues now have to play these games in front of no fans. Like, this is what makes no sense to me and why I get frustrated and why I personally will continue to go out and do stuff and go to restaurants and would go to a game if I had tickets to it. As long as it's not going to be banned, life goes on for me personally. That's how I'm going to go about it. But otherwise, you know, what's the deal here? Like, are the leagues going to step in or is the government going to step in and say, no, everything's been shut down and we have to get this contained? Because if you're going to go that way and it feels like we're trending that way, let's get it. Let's pull the plug on everything now. Otherwise, it feels like we're just kind of like riding the fence, which I find frustrating.
Well, I do feel there is no organized plan, which is that is frustrating. The thing is crying out for some leadership. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But this, Mike Gorman predicted this. Mike Gorman was on yesterday. Jimmy, do you have that? Mike Gorman said this right off the top of his Touch and Rich interview. It was yesterday, even the day before.
No, it was yesterday.
Yesterday morning, Gorman said this.
I think we're going to be playing games in empty arenas pretty soon, sooner than people think. I think each one of these leagues, the NHL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, who will all be in operation over the next couple of weeks, they don't want to be the first one to have some disaster turn out on their hands. Or, as you were saying earlier, Rich, that, you know, have the name of your team be associated with the virus. So I think they're going to have to do something to show good faith. If they're canceling St. Patrick's Day parades and canceling the whole country of Italy, I think they can cancel a Celtic basketball game.
You see, I think, you know, he mentions Italy. Like, I, you know, just from reading on it, it feels like they were a little casual about it to start. And the next thing you know, it's crippled the whole country and they've had to shut the whole country down. So instead of being, you know, overly cautious on the front side and maybe overreacting, but that protects you against something even worse on the back side of it. And so I just don't get the pushback from being cautious. I don't. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. What is wrong with being cautious? And, because you're protecting yourself. You're protecting yourself from things that have happened in the other parts of the country. I mean, again, reading on Italy, like they originally shut some things down. And in some communities, people got upset that they couldn't go and get their nightly glass of cappuccino or, you know, sit in the cafes, and they were shutting down these places. And the Italians are so used to this, their culture, they couldn't handle it. They started complaining. And so they opened up bars and cafes again. And the next thing you know, it's, you know, their hospitals are overrun. All these things are getting overrun and they have to shut the whole country down. So you can just like bite the bullet a little bit on the front side. I don't get the pushback from that.
Well, so look, and here's the other thing is we're obviously headed to something that is basically essential personnel and non-essential personnel aren't going to go to work. So whether that's the NBA or anything else, you're going to have people playing in empty arenas. And initially I thought, well, that's kind of stupid. Then I thought about it and I said, Well, you know what? Like, it's the same for every team. There's no competitive advantage for one team over another if all the arenas are empty. And, Murray, I recognize right now where, you know, some games are one way and some games are another, so that I don't like either. But I think that's where we're headed. I think you're going to see it. People are going to start working from home here soon. Okay. If they're not already.
Finally, just give me this other Gorman cut, because he hit on the handshake thing as well. It's hard not to think about it in these times. Go ahead.
Where's your concern level?
My concern level is high, and I think a lot of it has to do with at the Celtic game the other night. A lot of people come walking by the table, and they want to say nice things, which I'm very flattered by how long they've listened or how long I've been doing this, and they stick out their hand to shake hands. And I just don't want to shake hands with anybody anymore.
Okay. So he goes on from there. But
it's nothing personal, but I'm just trying to cut down the odds of being the one who gets this thing. So
yeah, I can stop there. Nothing personal. Nothing personal. And I'm with you, Murray. Handshake says a lot about a man. No doubt about it. My father was big into that. He used to, bro, your dad ever give you the handshake thing? Firm and look him in the eye. Firm and look him in the eye. If I wasn't firm and looked the guy in the eye, we'd have a talk. And, you know, I even tell my daughters, it's not quite a girl thing quite like it, but it's the same thing. Firm handshake, look him in the eye. I agree with you. But what if it's getting a sick? And what is wrong with it? Again, I just love that bow gesture the Japanese do. I think it's such a gracious thing. It's such a... what's the word that I was looking for that you used before?
Deferential.
Deferential. Yeah. Thank you. Deferential. It's graceful. It's deferential. And it's not dirty. And I guess we're not going to, you know, assume a Japanese cultural gesture. But let's just come up with one of our own. Something that's non-contact.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Jazz hands.
Thumbs up. Fist pump.
Well, we have one in Massachusetts, Murray, but it's not the
thumb.
I don't mean that.
Yeah.
We got to come up with something that's us, right? If we're too cool to, you know, to be deferential and bow before someone, if we're too tough for that, come up with something else. Come up with something else that ain't the handshake. And I don't even know if the knuckles get it done. There's some contact in there, but I do wonder about that. So anyway, there's your coronavirus update. Let's get to the Brady Watch. Maz has been, holy crap, 4 straight days without any discussion of the Brady Watch? You must be all pent up, son.
I had withdrawal.
I understand. Okay. Maz gets caught up, and we get you caught up on the Brady Watch right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.